Welcome to the Mac for the Blind audio tutorial series. I'm John Panarees, and in this lesson, I'm going to be doing a basic introduction to iOS. Since it's really difficult to, put your finger on exactly what somebody is going to be using for the purposes of a lesson like this, I'm going to be pretty general as far as the first part of this lesson. I'm going to do this in a way that I normally work with my clients. And although I will be using an iPhone 6 running iOS 8.4, I'm going to kind of do this in broad strokes and make it so that the material that I go over here is usable no matter whether you're using an iPhone, whether that be an iPhone 6, iPhone 6 Plus, 5S, 5C, 5, 4S, etc., or an iPad Air, iPad Mini, etc., or an iPod Touch. And even to some extent, some of this will even apply to Apple Watch users as well. So one of the first things that I try to go over with people when I start working with them is making sure they understand the importance of the physical layout of their device. What I mean by this is knowing where the power button is located. For example, on an iPhone 6 or 6 Plus, it is actually on the right-hand side of your iPhone towards the top of the device, while older iPhones have it at the top right corner. You want to know where your volume buttons are on the left-hand side of the iPads and the iPhones, your volume up, your volume down. Your mute switch, you want to make sure you know how to mute the device and understand what muting it does as far as turning off system sound. So if it's an iPhone, you are basically turning off the ringer and text tones, etc. And it does not mute voiceover speech, but it prevents you being interrupted by notifications and so forth. The mute switch is a little recessed switch that you will find right above the volume buttons on your iDevice. If you use your fingernail, you can push the switch away from you to mute and pull it towards you to unmute the device. Now, when I go over these descriptions and the gestures, I am holding my iPhone in portrait mode, meaning that the device is standing up in my hand with the home button, the little round depressed button on the front of your device at the bottom. So this is called portrait mode, which is different from turning a device on its side, either with the home button facing to the left or the right. Some people prefer to use it in landscape mode this way. I like portrait mode, standing straight up. So this is how I will describe the device. By default, whether you're using an iPhone, an iPod, or an iPad, if you turn the device in your hand, it will switch modes automatically. And there is a way to lock orientation that I will discuss briefly at the end of this lesson. But just to get back to the physical layout of your device, you want to make sure that you also know what your ports do at the bottom of your device, the earphone jack, your connection for your lightning adapter for recharging your device, and your little external speaker you should be able to feel at the bottom. You should know your camera locations, the front facing, which you can't feel, because it's under the glass, and on your back-facing camera, which is done for pictures and videos, you can feel that on your iPhone or your iPad or your iPod Touch. It's on the back upper right corner with the screen facing you in portrait mode. So these are the types of things I like to go over with the specific user of their device as far as making sure they understand where these things are, because you should know the locations. You should also consider putting your device in a case of some kind. There is a lot of information about different cases, out-of-box, life-proof, etc. I am not endorsing any particular case for your iDevice. There's all kinds for the iPhone. There's all kinds of for the iPad that include keyboards, that don't include keyboards. This is all user preference based on your needs and what you feel is best for you. There are two other things I like to go over in the introductory material as well, besides the physical layout of your device. The first thing being the difference between turning your device off completely or putting it to sleep. There is a difference between sleep mode and turning the device off. I have had some individuals who have mistakenly believed that turning the device off is the same thing as sleep, and it's not. Turning the device off requires that you hold down the power button until you hear
Tuesday,
voiceover
August 25th, 7
tell
notifications.
You to power off.
Now, watch live with your power off button. Slide or double tap.
If you hear power off, you would simply double tap with one finger, and that would turn your iDevice off. It takes about 20 to 30 seconds for it to completely shut down. But once it's off, it's off. There's very little battery drain other than what you'd get in standby mode. You know, any device is going to drain battery when it's turned off, even a laptop. So it does not have an infinite battery lifespan. So if you leave it off
seven
for a month, eventually you are going to have a situation where your battery will be completely dead. But at least off position, you're not draining it in any considerable amount.
Screen locked.
Now, in order to turn the device back on, you simply hold the power button, count to five, and let go of it, and give it about 20 to 30 seconds. And with voiceover on, you should get voiceover speech and notified that the device is actually
calendar.
On.
Training with Brittany.
So that's a quick way of turning off and turning
screen
on
locked.
Your device. Doesn't matter whether you're using an iPhone, an iPad, or an iPod Touch, the process is the same. Whether you choose to leave your phone on, for example, all the time is your call. Some people will turn off their phones at night or when it's not being used for a while. Some people leave their iPhones on all of the time. That's really user preference. They're made to be workhorses. However, if you don't turn your device off, you should still get in the habit at least once or twice a month of rebooting, turning the system completely off and turning it back on again. Even if this is an iPod Touch or an iPad, if you're not turning the device off regularly, you should still reboot at least once or twice a month according to Apple specifications. This is what I do. Usually if I'm home, a lot of times I do turn my phone off at night. My iPad is off most of the time unless I'm actually using it. I don't leave it in sleep mode. That way, it's just because I don't use it often enough like I do with my phone. However, when I'm on the road, I do leave my phone on all the time because it's the only way that people can reach me. So if I'm on the road, I will reboot the phone at least once during my trip just to be sure, clear caches. Because you got to remember, folks, these iDevices are mini computers. So you have to kind of consider them and treat them as such. That's the kind of technology we have in the palms of our hands right now. Now, speaking of charging and battery life and so forth, that's the other topic of discussion that I normally get into with a new client. You should know how to recharge your device. There is a port at the bottom of your device, no matter what kind it is. You plug your lightning adapter that comes in the box with the device. There should be a square block charger that goes into the wall socket. And this is recharging your device directly connected in to AC power. Depending on your device, that will affect how long it takes to recharge from a dead battery. So for example, an iPhone 6, an iPhone 6 Plus, the newer iPads, they're a lot faster than the older devices. iPhones can pretty much recharge in 3 to 3.5 hours. iPads take a little bit longer, maybe 4 or 5 hours for a full recharge. If you decide to recharge your device using a computer connection, understand that it's going to take twice as long as it will if you plug into a wall socket. So if you leave it connected to your Mac or your PC and rely on that as a recharge mechanism, it is going to take, as I said, twice as long. So keep that in the back of your mind. Now, according to Apple specifications, with as far as battery maintenance goes, they say you should drain your battery down to 0% or flat at least twice a month, and then recharge back up to 100%. There is a school of thought that you may read about online that talk about the specific types of batteries that are being used in iDevices, and that actually you should treat it a little bit differently. It obviously doesn't have a memory as the NiCad batteries once had of days of old, but you still should consider not going below 10% and charging up to 90 instead of 100. Now, again, this is a school of thought. If you want to subscribe to, that's up to you. If you think you know the battery and you want to go that way, that's your call. I'm only telling you what is specified in Apple technical data and from speaking to Apple people at the stores. So it's up to your discretion how you want to recharge it. The point here, though, as I try to influence my clients to understand, is keep track of your battery life and try to understand the behavior and the habits of your use of your device and how it relates to how quickly your battery drains. So in other words, if you're going out for the day and you're at 40%, is that 40% going to be enough to last for the whole day? You know, how much battery life do you get out of a course of your time using the device in the course of a day really comes down to a lot of factors such as Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, et cetera, et cetera. You know, how much time you spend calling people, if it's a phone, how much streaming you do through the internet. Things like this all impact your battery life. So it comes by just basically using the device and keeping track of those things mentally. And that will influence or impact how, you know, you're going to treat and handle recharging your device. So once we've established these little factors up front, the next thing I try to get into is talking about important voiceover gestures. Now, understand up front that voiceover changes the interface. It is not the same way a sighted person uses their eye device. So there is a retinue of gestures that you need to know how to perform and mechanically do well enough to use your device. I say this to my clients all the time, and it's the truth. The gestures are the keys to the kingdom. If you learn the gestures well, you will be able to navigate and use applications and effectively use your device as well as a sighted person. Now, one thing to understand, if you got a brand new eye device out of the box, if you press the home key, that little round depress button at the bottom of the screen, if you hold your device in portrait mode, that will turn voiceover on. The thing, though, to understand is if you're going to try to set up the device by yourself, you will get speech and you'll be able to go through the setup process, but you will have to type into fields and make selections. So you should have some knowledge of how to do the gestures if you're going to do this up front. You can plug the device into your computer, whether it be a Mac or a PC, and do the setup process for that eye device that way as well. That might be a little bit easier because you do have control with your computer over the screens and so forth. Or, of course, if you're in the store and you're buying it from an Apple store or a Verizon or an AT&T or Sprint store or whatever the case may be, you could always have it set up by the individual who you purchase it from. Before you walk out of the store, just make sure that everything is set up, that you're logged into Apple, iCloud, if you're going to use iCloud. Make sure there's no setup screens left, and that when you turn this device on, when it's in your hands, that you're going to get VoiceOver up and running, and you can use the device without having to deal with setup, unless you are, again, willing and able to go through the setup screens. I'm not trying to dissuade or convince anybody otherwise. I am all for blind independence, and I set up the devices myself personally, but I just want to warn you that you will have to type into fields and so forth, so you might want to think carefully before you try to do this on your own. And the triple-click home process, the feature can be set up after the fact, so after you get VoiceOver up and running, you can simply tell the individual to go into settings under general and accessibility and choose the accessibility shortcut and enable VoiceOver so that it's the triple click home. I will demonstrate this or walk you through it a little bit later once we get past the gestures and the screen descriptions. So as far as VoiceOver gestures go, I already talked about the first important one, the single finger double tap. Now, this is done, as with all gestures, with the tip of your finger. You want to make sure that you're not using knuckle or your nail. If you're a female with particularly long nails, sometimes the nail gets in the way or you have a habit of tapping with the nail. I don't have fingernails, so I don't have to worry about it. But you use the fingertip as though you are being fingerprinted. So I'm going to put this device at a lock screen Tuesday. When we get to unlock button, you would typically double tap. Now, in my case, I have a passcode and Touch ID enabled.
Screen locked.
So if I want to open my device, I have to just put my finger on it and print will unlock the device. But if you are not using a passcode and you don't use Touch ID, you simply take your one finger and you double tap the screen. So I'm just going to open up the messages application just as a
messages +13600.
Okay, so I opened up messages right into an existing text message, but the point is the double tap single finger will open or activate an item, open an application, select an item. It's used throughout the whole operation of your iDevice, and it's the one gesture you should really get used to right away. 1, 2, it's just a single finger double tap. So I'm going to close messages. The way you close applications is to hit the home button, and it takes you back out messages. To your home screen.
Double tap to open.
Now, understand that the home button is called that for just that purposes. That you leave the application and you go back home to your home
NHL
screen.
Notification.
So just if you remember that and you heard, I got a notification, you'll hear notifications when you set up your phone and you're all ready, good to go. You can get text notifications from text messages. You can get phone calls. You can get calendar reminders. You can get sports updates, as I just did from NHL. You can get MLB, NFL. You can get news updates from Fox or CNN. So these types of things will kind of happen as you're working and as your day goes by. If you don't have the phone awake as I do right now, and it's in sleep mode, you'll still get the notification. You might hear it go off, and then you could see it in your lock screen, which I will discuss when we talk about screen layouts. Now, so I said single finger double tap gesture number one. The second gesture Notes. That I teach people Messages. Is called the slide
double tap to
open. Gesture. The slide gesture is used to learn the layouts of your screens. So you put your finger Camera. Down. I'm going
to
put it on
message, cap, messages.
On messages here, camera. Which is the top
messages. Double tap to open.
Left corner of every iDevice by default. It's column 1, row 1 of your icons, your application. So if I start sliding my finger to the right,
calendar, Tuesday,
I
weather,
will start to go over
maps,
my
double tap to open.
Different applications. If I slide
store.
My finger down,
Reminders.
I can go across
notes.
My screens.
Camera, notes.
So the Double thing to understand to with an iPhone 6 is you have 6 rows of 4 applications. So 4 columns across the screen, and you have 6 rows.
Messages.
So if I drop Camera. Down.
Double notes.
3.
Contacts.
4.
Health.
5.
Finance folder.
6.
4 apps.
So there's my
Double
6 rows.
Open.
And,
Help.
You know, you're going
to
have
open.
Your
Apple
4
folder.
Across the
extras folder. Blindness apps folder.
So there's my 4 columns across my bottom row. So as I said, with an iPhone 6, it is a 4 column, 6 rows. But on earlier iPhones, you have 5 rows with 4 columns. And different iDevices, you might have different situations. So that's why you use the slide gesture to learn the layouts of screens. And the same thing applies when you open up applications. You want to make sure you know where the most important buttons are, where the tabs are in the phone app, for example, at the bottom of the screen, or in the app store, the tabs at the bottom of the screen. You want to know locations of these things and be able to locate them fairly easily. So the slide gesture is a way to create a mental map of your screens. And you apply this information to either locating the items or later on when you feel that you're able to or you want to do so, you can move icons around to rearrange them in a specific order, or you could create folders to tuck away or organize your applications into common purposes. So all of your color identifiers, all your GPS applications, things like that, you could put into folders. But in order to create folders and move icons around, you have to have a pretty decent idea of the layouts of your screen so you know where you're moving things. And that's where the slide gesture becomes important. Now, gesture number 3 is called the single finger flick to the right or the left. This moves you forward one item at a time going right, moves you backwards one item at a time going to the left.
Messages.
So if I start
Double
with messages and I flick
Calendar,
to the right.
Tuesday, clock, 10, photos, camera.
Okay,
Double
so I'm
weather.
Going forward
Maps,
application by
videos,
application and working my way
up,
row
notes,
by row
reminders,
through my
iTunes
applications.
Store,
if I go backwards.
Reminders, notes, videos. Maps, weather, camera.
By flicking left, I'm going back towards the top of the screen. Now, in case you're wondering, okay, John, what do you mean by flick? Just what it sounds like. You take one finger, you place it on the screen, and you pretend as though you're brushing a piece of dirt or dust from the glass. Now, the way I try to encourage or suggest to my clients, try to start at the opposite edge of any gesture in which the direction the gesture is meant to go. So, for example, if I'm flicking to the right, I want to start on the left edge
camera
of the screen,
double tap to
somewhere
open.
Towards the middle of the screen, you know, but at the left edge, and I just flick straight across.
Weather, maps, videos.
If I want to go to the double left, I start open. On the right edge of the screen.
Maps, weather,
and I flick back
camera.
To the left.
Double
so about halfway
open.
Through the gesture, you lift off, and you don't put your finger back down. Sometimes people have a habit of flicking, but then immediately putting their finger back down. And what that basically does is it moves the focus. You got to remember, when you touch the screen,
page 1 of 2, adjust the
your
folder. Set contacts,
focus for VoiceOver
weather,
goes whatever you touch.
Apple Watch.
So if you flick,
tap to open.
And let's say calendar is next to messages, and then instead you put your finger down a little ways down the screen, you're going to end up on reminders or settings. So the point here is don't put your finger down after you flick. Use the gesture, go straight across, lift up, and then put your finger down to reset your gesture. So that's the single finger flick to the right or the left. You know, it's something that will help you get very quickly through your application. So you use the flick in combination with the slide gesture. The slide gesture teaches you the layout of your screens. The flick gesture can quickly move you around. I have experienced listening to blind people who simply try to use the slide gesture to find things on a screen. And sometimes they have decent luck because sometimes you put your finger down in the general location and you're able to find it. But I've been in a lot of situations where it's painful to listen to somebody try to find an item. So for me, knowing the layouts of my screen, if I put my finger down,
Apple Apps folder,
and
apps.
I'm on Apple Apps,
double
and I know I want
to
get to settings, I know settings is one or two flicks to the left away from apps based on my screen layout.
12. Settings.
So there I
double
go.
I
just
open.
Flicked twice to the left and I hit settings. So I can quickly find applications based on my knowledge from the slide gesture of the layouts of the screen, but also the flick will get me quickly from point A to point B. And I know some people are very against flicking, and you'll hear some blind users tell you, use the slide gesture. Then you get other people who are solely flickers and they don't use the slide gesture at all. And again, your device, you go about it the way that ends up suiting you best, but I'm just giving you advice from having taught people and using the devices myself that the slide and flick gestures used in combination or tandem are going to give you the best results. Okay, so gesture number 4 involves 3 fingers, and it's a slide or a flick, whatever you want to call it. So you're going to take 3 fingers, and you can either go left to right to left, up to down, or down to up. Now, the left to right or the right to left gesture specifically turns the pages of either your home screen or the application. So, if I wanted to turn the page, I got 2 pages of applications and I'm on page 1. If I take 3 fingers,
row 4, page 2 of 2,
and I swipe
folder,
to the left,
7 apps,
I turn to
open.
Page 2. If I swipe to the right,
page 1 of 2, messages.
I go back to page
double
1.
Tap to open.
So, left.
Row 1, page 2 of 2, productivity
goes to the
folder.
Next page,
7
right,
apps, page 1 of 2,
goes
messages.
Back to the previous page.
Double tap to open.
Now, you might be saying to yourself, well, John, you just said that the single finger flick to the right goes forward one item at a time, and the single finger flick to the left goes backwards one item at a time. Yes, you heard correctly. That was not a mistake on my end, though I am prone to make mistakes, but in this case, it is not. 3 finger swipe to the left turns to the next page. 3 finger swipe to the right goes to the previous page. The reason being, you have to think of it in these terms, as an Apple person once told me many years ago. Well, not many years ago, but a few years back. If you take a printed book and you want to turn the page, you lift the page and you bring it to the left to reveal the next page. If you're going to go backwards, you lift the page and you bring it to the right to reveal the previous page. That's how you got to think of this with the 3 finger swipe to the left or the right. So you're going to be turning pages either on your home screen, or sometimes you're in situations in which applications require that you move from page 1 to page 2, or et cetera, et cetera. Now, as far as the 3 finger swipe up or down, this is a scrolling gesture. So up moves down, down moves up. So I'm going to use the contacts
Apple
application,
folder, health,
and that's
setting,
a few
activity,
here.
Apple Watch, contacts.
And I'm going to open up my contacts.
Contacts,
and I'm going
all contacts,
to show you.
Groups, button.
So if I swipe up with three fingers.
Rows 10 to 24 of 195. Top of rows 22. Rows 35 to 40. Rows 46 to 60 of rows 58 to 72
of 195. I am scrolling down the screen by taking three fingers, starting at the bottom of the screen, and I'm flicking straight up with the three fingers. If I put my finger down on my glass.
Andrew Ingram.
Okay, so I'm up to letter I's in my contacts simply by doing it that way. Now, if I flick down, I will be going in the opposite direction.
Rows 46 to 60 of 195. Rows 35 to 48 of 100. Rows 22 to 37 of 195. Rows 10 to 24 of 195.
Okay, so now if I touch the screen.
Heather Berg.
I'm at the B's. So I just put my finger down, and I have a lot of contacts, folks. So scrolling is the best way if I'm not going to use the table index or the rotor, which will be discussed in a later lesson. But that's how you do the three-finger swipe up or the three-finger swipe down. It just allows you to scroll in the same way a sighted person would scroll the screens. All right, so I'm going to hit home, and I'm going to jump back to my home screen. And by the way, if you are following along, you could definitely duplicate everything that I am doing, and I hope that you are doing so, which is the point of this lesson, is that you have your iDevice in your hand, and you are attempting to do these things. Your home screen is obviously going to be different from mine, but you should generally be able to do a lot of these exercises in the same way that I'm doing it. Now, the fifth gesture that I normally teach my clients is a four-finger double tap. This takes you into what is called the voiceover practice area. I'm stressing here four-finger double tap. If you are doing this with me, be very careful, because if you don't do four fingers and you do three instead,
speech off,
you mute the speech of voiceover. Don't worry, though, if you do it again with three fingers,
speech on,
you get the speech back on. So this is an accidental thing that people will sometimes do by, you know, accidentally doing a three-finger double tap, especially with the four-finger double tap. The thing to keep in mind is that you're obviously, through physics or biology, whatever you want to call it, your index finger, your middle finger, and your ring finger are much longer than your thumb and your pinky. So if you go to do the four-finger double tap, your pinky or your thumb is going to always touch a little bit after. So the way I have tried to do this, and I've kind of gotten myself to do this, and I recommend it to other folks, if you're not going to do two hands to do the four fingers, if you want to do one hand, tuck your shorter finger behind its neighbor. So if you got the thumb, tuck it a little bit behind the index finger. So this way it forces the longer fingers to bend. So when you do the gesture,
starting help, to
you
stop
get the help.
Perform a four-finger double tap or two-finger scrub, or press escape on the keyboard.
So the help mode puts you in a situation where you could practice your gestures. So if I do a one-finger flick to the right.
Flick right, move to next item.
Okay, if I do a left.
Flick left, move to previous item.
If I do the three-finger scroll.
Three-finger flick up, scroll down one page. Three-finger flick left, scroll right one page.
So it does the gestures without actually affecting your phone. So you could spend time just going over the gestures over and over again, whether it's the gestures we've covered in this lesson, or if you just learn about other gestures, or you listen to the other lessons that I'm going to have on iOS, you'll be able to practice them without affecting the phone, which is great. This is how I learned to do the gestures. People think, my clients sometimes think I'm just making this up, but I used to spend 15 minutes, a half hour in the practice area going over these gestures. And back in the earlier versions of iOS, there was not a four-finger double tap to get into the gestures. You actually had to go to the voiceover settings, find the practice area button, and double tap on it, which is buried four levels down in your settings. So the four-finger double tap. Practice area, you can close the practice area simply by hitting the home button, doing the four-finger double tap again, or doing what is called a two-finger scrub, which is basically taking two fingers and just scrubbing quickly back and forth about three or four times.
Two-finger scrub escapes the current context, stopping help.
So that's how you would leave the help. And the two-finger scrub is awesome because it takes you back screens. So if you go into messages and you open up a message from somebody, or you go into settings and you go down into general settings or accessibility and you want to get back levels, instead of having to find the back button all the time to double tap on, you could do the two-finger scrub and easily be kicked back a level. And this is great on an iPad, particularly where the screen real estate is a lot larger. So there is your basic gestures that I start people off with to get them up and running, at least well enough to get around the device and be able to navigate and open applications. So with this said, let's talk about screens. So I'm going to lock my screen for a second here.
Screen locked.
And I'm going to open it quickly. Now, the problem here before I do this is, just so you know, and maybe people already know this, but your screen locks very, very quickly. So if you're going to unlock your device, you better get used to finding that unlock button quickly, or using your Touch ID or starting your passcode quickly, because if you don't, the screen will lock in a matter of moments. Now, when you unlock your screen, you're going to have four items typically by default that are available. So you have your
Tuesday, August 20th, 10:41.
You have the time.
Tuesday.
You have the date.
Unlock button.
You have the unlock button.
Open camera button.
And you have the open camera button. So I'm flicking from left to right. If I flick back to
Tuesday,
the left,
10:41 p.m.
I go back in the other direction. So I'm just going to unlock the phone with my thumb.
Message weather.
Just so I'm double tap on my home screen here. But just a note about the lock screen. You have to unlock your device before you can get to the home screen. It's like being on the front door of your house. You have to put the key in the door, unlock your front door before you can walk into your house or your apartment. Same thing with the iPhone. You either got to unlock it by double tapping on the unlock button, typing in your passcode, or putting your finger down for Touch ID on the home button. And just as a side note too, Touch ID is accessible to blind people in VoiceOver with the iPhone 5S. The 6 or the 6 Plus, and the newest version of the iPad Air. You could set it up in settings under Touch ID and passcode. It is accessible. It prompts you when to put your finger down and lift it on the home button. A piece of advice, make sure you use multiple fingers, more than one finger. You should have at least two fingers able to Touch ID unlock your device. And number two, when you're setting up the Touch ID, make sure you turn your finger in multiple directions as you're putting it down to give it as much of an angle as possible. Okay, so once you're on the home screen, now the home screen actually consists of three parts. We've already discussed the actual icons or the application layout, which is the main part of your screen.
Camera.
So messages and all the other icons, these are all part of the
maps, video, notes,
the actual home screen itself. But there's actually two parts other than this main part that you should be aware of. First part is the status bar. Status bar is the top of the screen.
10:43 p.m. Status
bar
item.
Right towards the very top of your device.
To reveal the notification center.
And it contains all of your status indicators. Your clock.
Do not disturb. Status bar item. Orientation locked.
Orientation locked.
Bluetooth connected.
Bluetooth.
31% battery power.
There's my battery power. 31%.
With three fingers.
If I flick back to the left.
Location track. Orientation. Do not disturb. 10:43 of three Wi-Fi bars.
Three of
two. Status bar item.
These are my Wi-Fi. My AT&T. Two of five bars.
Status bar.
AT&T. So all my status indicators are here. Now, for an iPhone user, it's easier to sort of find this area because all you got to do is start at the top center of your screen, come slightly down a little bit, and you'll feel a little tiny groove, like a little rectangular opening. That's the speaker when you put the phone up to your ear. If you start at that point and you go down on a right angle or come straight down little by little,
clock 10,
you'll
44,
get right
PM.
Into the status
double
bar without fail. So if you're going to the right a little bit, you might hit your battery status, your Bluetooth status. If you go down on a left angle, you can work your way towards your cell phone provider indicators. So from the status bar, you also can do two other things. You can do a three-finger swipe down to open up your notification center.
Tuesday, notification center.
Okay, so from the status bar, if you
selected,
touch the
today,
status
button,
bar and do a three-finger swipe down, you can get right into the notification center. I'm just going to close that, go to the
10,
status bar again.
PM.
I'm going to do a three-finger
swipe
up.
Down. Airplane
and that
mode,
puts
off.
You into the
double
control center. Now, while you're in the control center, if you're following along with me, I hope you are. If you start to flick to the right or slide, use your slide gesture.
Wi-Fi off, Bluetooth off, do not disturb, lock orientation on.
There is a lock orientation option here that you can then decide whether you want to be in portrait or landscape mode. And you can lock your orientation according to how you prefer it to be. So just double tap on it when you have the orientation that you want to lock it in to, if that's your desire. So that's where the lock orientation is located. Easiest place to get to it. I'm just going to hit the home button to get
messages.
Out. Now,
double tap to open.
at the bottom of your screen, right above your home button, there is another area called the dock. Now, by default, on a standard iPhone, you have the phone app, music, mail, and Safari as the four applications. On an iPad, it's music, mail, Safari, and I think either messages or contacts. I forget. I think it's contacts. But the point is, for an iPad, you can actually put two more items in the dock. It can have up to six. The iPhone and the iPod Touch only allow four. Now, as a piece of advice for future reference, if you decide that you want to move anything out of the dock, of everything you should leave in the dock, leave the phone app if it's an iPhone, leave the music app if it's an iPod Touch. Now, the reason why I bring up the status bar and the dock, besides their importance just overall, what you will notice, doesn't matter whether you have one page, three pages, eight pages, whatever.
Page 2 of 2.
I'm on page 2. Guess what?
10:46 p.m.
The status bar is at the top.
Swipe down with dock, mail, 2,484 unread emails.
The dock is visible at the bottom. So no matter what page of your icons you happen to be on your home screens, the dock and the status bar are always visible, which is why, again, considering what you might want to put in your dock, if you're not going to use your iPhone for music or email, you're not going to use your iPad for web browsing, whatever, you might want to think about switching out those apps with something that might be more useful, maybe messages or contacts or a third-party app that you're going to be using a lot. So that's the things, another reason why, again, later on you want to be considering moving stuff around on your home screen and knowing how to do that as well as creating folders. So again, status bar, main home screen with all your icons, and your dock at the bottom. Now, again, in case this is not clear, the icons that I've been talking about represent the individual applications on your iDevice. So they are there for specific purposes. Calendar is your calendar app. Reminders is your reminders app. Messages is your messages app for text messaging, etc., etc. So you should know that that's what they represent. And by double tapping on any icon, you will open that application and be able to use it from there. And as I said earlier, if you know the gestures and you conquer them, you want to learn mechanics. They call it muscle memory. They call it sense memory. Doesn't matter what term you desire to use. If you know these gestures, you could very easily navigate and use your device. So this is the basic lesson that I give all my clients to get them up and running on their devices. I then move on to other things such as typing on the device, the rotor. I get into specific application details and how to use them. And they will be addressed in other lessons that you will find on the Mac for the Blind website. And if you want to check out the iOS or Mac lessons that I have available, please visit www.macfortheblind.com. You can always send me an email with any questions or comments at john@macfortheblind.com, john@macfortheblind.com. You can follow me on Twitter @MacForTheBlind, or you can call the office at area code 631-724-4479. I thank you very much for listening to this lesson, and I hope you find it helpful and useful.